This is fun! The FU Network!
I'm Stephen Kersner. Welcome to the No Bullpen here on FU Politics on Fun, the FU Network. Well, don't need to tell you that the election's only a few days away. In fact, I don't even know when you're listening to this. It could have passed by now. But what we're talking about will still be relevant even after the election is gone. Because tonight we're going to take a look, today, whenever you're listening to this, we are going to talk about the relative strengths and weaknesses of the main three parties' campaigns during this period of the writ. The Liberals, the Conservatives, and the NDP. We're going to focus on them because they are the three oldest parties, the three parties that are polling the highest, and I don't really like talking about the Green Party, and I can't stand Maxime Bernier, so because I'm the host, I get to say we're not talking about them. But
what about the Bloc?
The Bloc has nothing to do with the rest of Canada.
I'm sure if they ran a candidate in British Columbia, they might get a couple votes here and there.
Well, you know, the fact is the Bloc actually does have something to do with the rest of Canada because their resurgence is hurting the Liberals in Quebec. But we'll see how long that lasts, because anybody who's watched elections long enough knows that after a debate, usually there's a bit of a bump for some people that eventually fades. And right now, anybody who is constantly checking the polls, it's not good for your blood pressure, because these things they change, depends on which polling company you're looking at. You don't even really know what their methodology is, so you don't know how accurately you should be taking it. I've talked to a couple of pollsters privately, and I know what they're expecting, but pollsters in many cases are like economists. They can tell you afterwards why something happened, but they're very bad at telling you when something's going to happen or how it's going to happen in advance. Joining us today, we've got one of our regular panelists, producer of Mensplaining here on FU Politics, Hafiz Noorani, who's out in... Are you in Victoria?
Vancouver.
All right. I never get that right because they both start with V's and they're on the West Coast, and I honestly have a hard time caring. But Hafiz is an expert at digital marketing and analytics, and has become quite the expert at podcasting as well. So thanks for joining us.
Thanks.
Mo Amir, talk about somebody who's become something of an expert at podcasting. He's got a podcast called This Is Van Color, which is something I recommend that you find and subscribe to. Mo is in Vancouver. Mo Amir, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me again. Always a pleasure.
And Mo, I forget what it is you do professionally.
I work in forestry. That's where I live my comfortable lifestyle, and then all the podcasting stuff is just for fun.
Wait, you work in forestry?
Yeah.
I never knew that before, I don't think. I just can't.
Many people are surprised, yeah.
Yeah, I can't imagine you out there climbing those trees with those belts and the goggles and the helmet and stuff like that.
I've seen him log ride.
It's very much an office job. I'm in the office,
okay.
And I'm selling our beautiful BC lumber all over the world.
Okay, so you're not actually out in the lumber, you know, the trees, the treed areas out in the Pacific Northwest, because I was going to ask you if you'd ever seen Bigfoot, but apparently not, because that's you're not out there. Andrew McLeod is what is your official title with the Tyee, Andrew?
I'm the legislative bureau chief in BC for them, so I'm in Victoria and I mostly cover provincial politics, but during the federal election I've been doing that.
Okay, and Andrew joined us once before, has tremendous amounts to contribute. I would recommend reading his stuff in the Tyee, which is spelled, the website is, it's the Thetyee.ca, am I right?
That's right.
Okay, thank you. for joining us again and looking forward to your contributions. We've got somebody new with us today. Michelle, tell us about you.
Awesome. Well, thanks for having me. I am joining you from just outside Brandon, Manitoba. And my name is Michelle Badusky. I actually run a social media platform here in the Westman area where we have been discussing, obviously, all sorts of politics. And we just came off of a provincial election on September 10th. So it's been an interesting few months.
Yeah, you poor thing. You've had no rest.
Oh, it's been exhausting.
Yeah. All right. So let me begin with paraphrasing an aphorism in the legal world, which says that if the facts are on your side, you pound the facts. If the facts aren't on your side, you pound the table. Well, looking at the Liberal campaign, the facts were on their side. A strong economy, good jobs reports, you know, low unemployment, well-negotiated trade agreements, pretty successful dealing with that madman Donald Trump. Record number of kids raised out of poverty, took serious steps at beginning the reconciliation with our Indigenous population. There's a lot that the Liberals could have been pounding the facts about. But instead, they chose again to hang the whole thing on the personage of Justin Trudeau, which worked the first time because he had no record. He was a leader of the party, but and had been an MP, but had not been a prime minister, had not run a government. You can't run an incumbent the same way you can run somebody who's a challenger. You just can't. But they tried to do the exact same thing with Justin this time around, and it may have worked, but for SNC-Lavalin, pictures of blackface, brownface. They went in to this campaign with what they considered to be their strongest asset, heavily impaired, and yet chose to make this a referendum on Justin Trudeau, not on the Liberal government. And then in that, I think they made an absolutely disastrous decision, because if they had just run on their record, I think this would not be a horse race. But trying to, I don't know if they're trying to rehabilitate Justin. I suggested to them that, hey, you know what you should do is just run on your record, and that will rehabilitate Justin Trudeau. Of course, that was before the pictures in Time magazine, thanks to Warren Kinsella. But they made terrible strategic mistakes in this election. And after SNC-Lavalin, after the Ethics Commissioner's report, which I don't know how many of you read all 63 riveting pages, but what was very interesting is all the way through that report, there's one meeting of Trudeau with Wilson Raybould at the beginning when she says, are you trying to pressure me? And he says, no, and I want everything done within the law. And he has a meeting with his people and says, everything has to be done within the law. Then he went off to try to negotiate the new NAFTA. And all through the rest of it, it's people in the PMO and in Morneau's office and places like that having conversations with Wilson Raybould's office, and it clearly stating they didn't tell the prime minister. He didn't even know. So the people running the prime minister's office did a lousy job of communications, of keeping the prime minister informed. And yet, after Gerald Butts resigned, Butts being the guy who was in charge of the PMO, the prime minister hires him back to run his campaign. He didn't learn a lesson. He's a very loyal guy. I know him somewhat personally. He's a very loyal guy, and loyalty is something to be treasured and to be respected. However, when you're talking about loyalty to a friend in a personal relationship, it's one thing. When you're talking about loyalty to a nation, to running a government efficiently, your loyalties lie with the citizens of the country, not with your friends. And he put Ben Chin in as his new chief of staff. Ben Chin implicated very, came out smelling very poorly with the SNC report from the ethics commissioner. He makes bad choices about putting people in positions of authority, and then we wind up with this campaign. And it just seems to me during this campaign also, and I can't blame him, but if any of you have been followers of the Rocky series, the Rocky movie series, in Rocky III at the beginning, when he just says, I don't want it no more. His training is lackluster. He doesn't have the spirit. He says, I just don't want it no more. This is before he got the Eye of the Tiger and that great Survivor song, and refound his spirit. Justin Trudeau, during this campaign, I found that it almost seems like he'd like to be just about anywhere else. His appearances have been somewhat robotic. His appearances at the debate, though he did slip in one good zinger at the last one, this has not been the guy that got into a ring with Patrick Brazeau, who's twice his size, and beat the shit out of him. This is not the Trudeau blood, the fighting blood that his father demonstrated and that he has demonstrated. It just seems like he doesn't even want to be there. And I wouldn't want to be either if the media was against me and I had an opponent who was constantly lying and the media is not calling him on it. Now, Hafiz Nirani, your thoughts. Has this been a good campaign, a well-run campaign by the Liberals?
Look, I think this has been a serious letdown as someone that is a voter for the federal Liberals last election compared to this election. I think last election, Justin Trudeau really secured his vote with the Canadian people during the debates, especially the Monk debate, where, you know, he actually spoke considerably well against Stephen Harper, who had 9 years in charge of Canada. So in terms of where we are this go around, it's been a very flat Justin Trudeau. He comes across as defeated. I would say that his energy levels, I actually went and saw him in person, mind you, before blackface came out and brownface. But again, it wasn't the same Trudeau that I saw in 2015. Now, in 2015, I saw him the day before the vote, and I saw the energy in that crowd compared to the energy in the crowd I saw this year. There was a much more positive feeling of unity in 2015 around Justin Trudeau. In 2019, it felt very much like there is that unity, but a little sense of fear as a group of voters that are progressive, but maybe not that progressive enough to vote NDP. So in essence, I think Justin Trudeau has let himself down by not really focusing on Canadians as much this time around. I think if he was more empathetic, if he came across and sounded more as though he was talking to actual people rather than a wide audience, I think he would actually come across a lot better. The body language, the emotion on his face, it's all painting a different picture. And part of me wonders, is it because he's holding back because he might be in this position again in 6 months? Or is it because maybe they're moving on and it's something we don't know?
Well, and these are all possibilities. It's also possible that if you know anything, and I did an interview here on the network with a former MP and cabinet minister in Paul Martin's government, the refusal of to allow certain people to speak during the SNC-Lavalin probe under the parliamentary privilege thing, it really hit him hard. Like it made him look like he was trying to hide something. When I think, in fact, if you understand parliamentary privilege and the reasons why somebody would deny that, it's less often, I think it's less for him to cover his ass than it was that he was protecting conversations that involved other individuals or companies which would have been dragged into this whole thing, which didn't deserve to be because they didn't have anything really to do with it. They were simply mentioned in the same meetings that this stuff came up. And so I think he's had to bite his tongue all the way through to do his job as prime minister and uphold parliamentary privilege and protect these individuals. And he's just had his ass kicked for it. And that would piss me off. But as far as strategically, the choice of leaning on Trudeau as their savior again, as opposed to their record, thoughts on that? Let's go to Michelle.
You know, I think you nailed it when you talked about Justin Trudeau and how loyal and how he's really trying to do the right thing and be the bigger person. And what I've seen through this whole campaign is how they've really really worked towards being, you know, the nice guy. And unfortunately, right now with the climate in Canada, and I see this in rural Manitoba, it's ugly. And you can't win against a bully by being a nice guy. And that's what's happening here is he is getting his ass kicked because no one is actually standing up and fighting. The majority of people, especially that I'm talking to, don't necessarily understand the facts. They get their information from memes and social media, and all they see is the big bully and the big words, and, you know, it doesn't even matter if it's true. It's how hard they're fighting to push it and ram it down our throats. And the Liberal campaign is sitting there saying, no, we're just going to be nice guys. We're going to, you know, smile. We're going to be the good ones here. And they're really missing the mark. They have an opportunity to come up fighting and prove themselves as the only centrist option that we have in Canada. And he's losing against both sides.
It's interesting. I mean, he's still, the polls put him as the most likely to form a minority government. But your points are extremely, extremely well taken. There's no fire. And I think people would rather see Justin Trudeau be that guy who beat up Patrick Brazeau, step up and say, you know what? Enough of this bullshit. Mr. Scheer, you're telling lies. You're a fucking liar. I mean, this is the individual who called Peter Kent in the House of Commons. I think it was either a fucking piece of shit or a piece of shit. And he was, either way, he's dead on in the character of Peter Kent. This isn't somebody who's afraid to, you know, mince words. And you're right. You remember that slogan, when they go low, we go high? How well did that work in the U.S. in the last election? It didn't, because people want to see a fighter. And I think they want to see, as you pointed out, Michelle, they want to see a guy who really wants to fight for them. And if he's not even fighting for himself, how's he going to fight for them?
Well, and that's exactly how I see it, is that there isn't anything. You want to talk about SNC-Lavalin, you want to, even blackface, brownface. There is nothing that has been used in this campaign against the Liberal Party, against Justin Trudeau, that cannot be worked in their favor with great, you know, like you said, fire. You know, speak to it, own it.
Give me an example. He apologized. I think part of the problem is that he's ashamed of himself. I think that he's ashamed of the blackface things he did in high school. And I think he's ashamed that he didn't know that Aladdin performance was racist at the time, even though people of color who were there at the time weren't offended. He feels he should have known better. I think he's ashamed of himself. That's showing.
I spoke to this on a vlog I did shortly after the blackface incident. It's like, he should have known. We all know he should have known. He knows he should have known. He is ashamed of it. But you know what? We've all done stupid shit that we're ashamed of, especially 20 years ago. So don't hang your head in shame and look like a whipped puppy in front of the country that you want to represent. Hold your head up high and say, yeah, I did stupid shit, and this is what I've learned from it, and this is why I'm going to take that lesson and be the best damn prime minister you've ever seen.
That is, you answered my question. How do you turn something like that around and be, make it fighting words and make it positive? And that's a great example. They should have been listening to you instead of butts. Mo Amir, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, just to reiterate what you were saying, I think when you are the incumbent government, you're running for re-election based on your accomplishments. And it's a really tough sell to say, hey, we're going to do X, Y, and Z, because the natural response is, okay, well, why didn't you do X, Y, and Z while you were in power? And you know that I've been very critical of the Trudeau government, but they have accomplished quite a few things. And one of the biggest things, which you mentioned at the top of the show, was the child poverty is down to its lowest levels in two decades. I think the lowest level since 2002. And the Liberals can at least partially attribute this to their child benefit program. Now, if they took that, and I mean, you don't even hear about that on the campaign trail, but if they took that and they hung their hat on that and said, okay, look at the work we've done in 4 years, imagine how much more we can do with another term, it would be a lot more effective. And I just don't see that. I don't see them hammering home the tangible accomplishments that cannot be undercut with curt responses like, you know, you bought a pipeline or other sort of memed responses. When it comes to Trudeau's actual energy level, I think we're all in agreement that he does seem a little deflated. He seems a little down. I think there's two things at play here. I wonder, one, if as an orator, we're kind of dulled by his drama teacher voice. I mean, we've heard it for many years now. Yeah. I wonder if that's gotten stale. I think it's good. He's a great speaker. But in contrast, when he gets flustered, it looks really bad for him. And lately, he just seems to be flustered, whether that's, you know, in contrast to Andrew Scheer calling him a phony or whatever else. There's just moments where he doesn't look good. And he's also been through a lot, I would say, in the last year, whether it is everything with Jody Wilson-Raybould and SNC-Lavalin. You know, you hear him bickering about the nastiness of the campaign, which we haven't really seen him as much of a complainer before. And one thing that hasn't been brought up is I do honestly wonder how much of an effect putting on that bulletproof vest at your own election rally has on a person. Because I just think like that's a very scary realization. I know he's the prime minister and, you know, he always has security and everything around him, but just kind of that realization of how nasty things have gotten, I think has an effect on you. And I wonder how much that's played a role, especially given the nastiness, which to plug my own show, which you rebroadcast on FU Politics, it was a prediction made through the Burnaby South by-election in February, where Melanie Green at Star Vancouver said this is going to be a really nasty election because we've seen what's happened in Burnaby South. There's a lot of angry people, and the rhetoric being used by a lot of parties is really troubling. And I think we've seen it come out in a full-blown way in the federal election.
Yeah, well, we're suffering from American osmosis. It was impossible for us to not have that, to not absorb as a country the toxic sludge that is in the air coming from the United States. It's coming from the fact that, well, I'm going to get into it. It's their own fault as a nation for ignoring their errors and their infrastructure and stuff for years, because if you said, hey, we're not number one, but we can be again if we work at it, then you hated the country and you should leave, even though you were born there. We don't have that history here, yet we've got a lot of people who, as my wife likes to say, have their dicks in it. And literally, there's just a lot of people out there who call themselves conservatives who are not conservatives. They're simply antagonists who are just there to piss off people who show empathy, because as far as they're concerned, that's weakness. I want to go to Andrew. Andrew, you've heard the conversation so far. What do you think of it? What do you have to add? Your opinion on what you've seen during this election from the Liberal campaign.
Yeah. It's tempting to just go through everything everyone said and say what I agree with and what I disagree with. I would say it seems like it's very much been an incumbent's campaign. You know, he, as has been pointed out, he has a record now of 4 years in government, and it's mixed. You know, there have been good things, you know, like some of those tax changes early on and the child tax benefits and that sort of thing. I like that he got rid of a bunch of the sort of the boutique tax things that the Conservatives had put in, you know, like the fitness credits and the arts credits and that sort of thing. That I don't think ever encouraged anyone to actually go out and sign their kids up for sports or art classes, but did give sort of money back to suburban folks.
Let's face it, that money for art classes and so on, I'm sorry, when you're living check to check or you're in poverty, you're not signing anybody up for art classes. That was money for upper middle class people who would have done it on their own or wouldn't have done it, but that money made no freaking difference.
Exactly. So what I'm getting at is that they made changes like that early on that made a lot of sense. But then on things like climate change, where they're talking about a plan, talking about goals, but at the same time they're doing everything they can to make sure that the pipeline goes through or continuing to subsidize fossil fuel companies. So it makes it very hard to be sort of the fresh voice. I agree with the point that Trudeau hasn't seemed sort of like the fighter that we knew him to be. I'm not sure that the Brazzo comparison is I'm not sure how much they want to raise that again. I'm not sure it's a good look to be
beating up the
Indigenous senator.
Well, not just that, but the senator who is a sad sack character himself. I mean,
exactly.
We didn't know that he was at least as I remember it, a domestic abuser or accused domestic abuser at the time with drug problems and everything else and so on. It wasn't like beating, Ivan Drago in Rocky.
Yeah.
Fighting spirit.
Yeah. So not going to the Monk debate, for instance, shows that same thing you're talking about, that he wasn't going to bring the fight to that. As a general note on the campaign too, just the fact that there were only the three debates with all of them and two of them were in French, and that they happened during the working day where I am out in BC instead of in the evening when people would have been watching was I think a major shortcoming of sort of the structure of the campaign period in general.
Well, that was in fairness not the plan of the campaign. That was come up with by an all-party committee and anybody who missed that English language debate did themselves a favor. Because it was just a bunch of people talking over each other, and you couldn't make out what the hell it was juvenile. If you watched the U.S. Democratic candidate debate on CNN the night before this particular podcast was recorded, they had like 400 candidates on stage, and somehow managed to have a better, more constructive dialogue than when there was what. Five, six people on stage. Yeah. That was a shit show.
I agree. The point I'm getting at is just that there wasn't a good opportunity for people to see them up against each other in the way that there have been in past campaigns here or in the Democratic primaries, as you point out. And I don't mean it as a failure of the Liberal campaign. I mean it as a failure of the election campaign period in general.
Right.
Whoever you want to blame.
Yeah.
I mean, they appointed an independent council to organize the debates, and then they did the TVA one in Quebec as well.
Right.
As a one off. But
I think that you mentioned some of the things that he has as black marks against them. I mean, environmentalists are pissed off because he approved a pipeline because, hey, when you get into office, sometimes you have to make compromises you don't want to make because you have to lead an entire nation, not just one particular group. But I think as far as things like electoral reform, not doing electoral reform, they should have been out in front of that before the writ was dropped with a better explanation that connected with Canadians who cared about that, about why they didn't do it. Like the things they didn't do or the promises they broke or the things they did that seemed to violate their brand, they should have been out in full force with proper PR well ahead of the election. And,
absolutely.
What do you have to say, Michelle?
Yep.
Sorry, I was just saying, absolutely. This election, it's not like it was a surprise election. We knew it was coming. They knew where the weaknesses were. They knew especially electoral reform was going to hit them hard and not following through with that. And I think that PR, like you said, the explanation to the Canadian people at a level that they could understand and relate to would have done them so much good instead of just seeming to step away and just want to ignore the negatives. And it really has hurt them in this election.
Sorry, go ahead,
That was me. It's Feast. I agree with what Michelle just said there. If you look at the PR campaign and the marketing campaign, it's the messaging is totally off. It seems as though it's like a greater than Dow character. I mean, even the Letterman jacket that he's wearing. This is not what Canadians need to be seeing Justin Trudeau as going into this election with everything that's happened already. It needs to come across way less rehearsed. It needs to come across way less scripted. It needs to come more from the heart. It needs to come out actually a lot more like Jagmeet Singh does. It doesn't need to be a video that's scripted and seen perfectly. Whether it's him running up the hill over here at the Grouse Grind or you know, sailing a canoe or walking with a bunch of Canadians, he does these things anyway. Make it seem authentic. Put someone in a boat with him and talk to the guy. Not show people this sailing idiot coming across the water on a canoe or the sweaty dude in shorts running up a hill. Show us the real Justin Trudeau. Show us the person that is going to lead us forward. And I wanted to make one other point on the pipelines thing. And you know what? He could have made this point a lot clearer. We can, if we're moving forward and away from oil development, we need a replacement source of energy for almost everything we use, whether it's our cars, our trucks. Our whole life runs on fossil fuels right now. And for anyone to say that we can just, you know, right away move away from a fuel source like that is not thinking in a pragmatic sense at all. They're thinking in a very idealistic mindset that is not around yet. And it is still a future that's 25 years away. And to say to Central Alberta, where that is the main job, that they need to move to another job without giving them a solution as to what job they're going to move to, it's a slap in the face for people that vote conservative like that. And I don't think any party has spoken to that. Until that happens, I think this is a stalemate we're going to be in for a while.
Well, if you look at the reaction of coal miners to Hillary Clinton, who said, you know, we're going to shut these mines down and we're going to find you other jobs.
And they said they're going to make them web designers. The funniest thing was the same media people that said that message, when they ended up losing their jobs and people started going after them and saying, well, why don't you become a web designer? They started freaking out.
Yeah, it's absurd. Mo, you were going to talk.
All I was going to say is this is a corner that Justin Trudeau painted himself into. These were promises that he made.
No. He's sorry, I got to stop you there. He didn't say he was going to kill all pipelines.
Okay, shut up, Hafiz. Let Mo talk.
Let's not talk about the pipelines specifically. Let's talk about the actual promises he made. Okay, so first, where was the public housing investment as Vancouver and Toronto suffered a housing crisis? The Liberals in 2015 promised the removal of GST on new capital investments in affordable rental housing. Where were the funds that the Liberal government promised BC to tackle money laundering? They came here, they made an announcement, there was no money. What have the Liberals done to address climate change? Because it's something they keep spouting off on the campaign trail, except to download the cost of carbon onto the consumer while continuing to protect fossil fuel conglomerates. They didn't phase out fossil fuel subsidies like they promised. They didn't redo the Kinder Morgan pipeline expansion review. They just bought the pipeline. Where was the electoral reform? Trudeau didn't even try. Where was the promise to end the use of omnibus bills? Well, it was an omnibus bill where the Trudeau government slid in the DPA legislation on SNC-Lavalin's behest. You know, what about Michael Spavor and Michael Kovering, our two citizens detained in China? I know that the government is working really hard on bringing them home, but we don't even get any political theater out of Trudeau to signal to people that this means something to him. I mean, the 2015 plan was very ambitious, and he made a lot of big promises. And I'm sorry, but the inaction and broken promises are some things that voters simply are not willing to forgive Trudeau for. And I know, Stephen, you're saying, you know, we have to look at the bigger picture here, but there are some voters that are genuinely upset about a lot of these promises.
And they are. And to be honest with you, I think I'm actually sickened by the expectations and reactions of some of these voters this time around. I've made no secret of the fact that I think that a lot of these affected white liberal voters who were, oh my, he did blackface 20 years ago, you know, our mutual colleague, Jay, who's Professor S on the program Matter of Fact here on the FU Network. He said in a chat to me today, he said, you know, when I came to Canada, and he's Pakistani, he said, when I came to Canada as a kid, and all the white kids were saying, ha ha, Paki, ha ha, Paki, where were the white people then stepping forward and saying, no, that's wrong? And he's like, you know, now all these years later, you're going to step forward and speak for me, and you're my big defender? Fuck you, I don't need your pity. And I think that a lot of these people of color have been very reasonable about the fact that, yes, Trudeau did this thing. It was wrong, but it was a long time ago, and he's done an awful lot to prove himself as somebody who, even if he's a complete phony, he's done good things for immigrant communities. They've been very reasonable about it. It's these white people who say, I can't forgive. First of all, you should never have believed that Justin Trudeau was a perfected being. And if you bought that shit last time around, you did it because you wanted to.
But that's the problem this time, is that last time they set him up as this ideal candidate, this you know, sunny ways, the shining light. And the problem to me isn't the brown face. It's not the pipeline. It's the conservatives have been painting him as, what's the line, not as advertised. And Jagmeet Singh from the NDP says the same sort of thing. You know, Trudeau says pretty words, but you can't believe them. And the more those things that add up that are different from what he ran on in 2015, you know, the bigger a problem he has overcoming that.
Yeah. Yes, Michelle.
I was just going to say that I think Canadians can forgive broken promises for governments. We are kind of used to them. We don't expect, I think people talk about it all the time, that they expect 100% of all promises to be fulfilled and live this wonderful life. But we are also realists. What we are missing with these promises is a backbone explanation as to why they did not happen. When people are outraged that electoral reform did not happen and wasn't even attempted, they needed to know why. And if they were told why, if there was an explanation from the Liberals well in advance of a campaign, because if you wait until an election is happening, nobody believes anything you say.
Well, that's true.
They had 4 years to explain all of those issues and get ahead of it, like you said.
And they should not. Because you know what the truth is? It's not that, Mo said this as well, it's not that Trudeau didn't even try electoral reform. They sent out questionnaires and found that the sample group they sent to really didn't have any burning desire. And the fact is that changing those methods of voting, at least one of them would have heavily favored the Liberals till time immemorial. And if you're going to change a voting system that seems to only be to benefit you electorally, you need the buy-in of the opposition parties to say, well, that may be the case, but this is a more fair system, a more democratic system, whatever. You need the opposition parties to support it. Otherwise, all they're going to say is, you changed it just so you can guarantee yourself a victory. And who can fight against that? He should have just come out and said, look, the opposition wouldn't cooperate. They were just going to use it against us. It turns out that there's a small group of people who are very vocal who care about it, but a wider group of Canadians who don't. And we're not going to put in a system which we're just going to be accused of having put in just to benefit ourselves. And by the way, I think mixed proportional is a shit show in just about every country it's ever been used in. So I'm glad it never happened. It's a shit show.
It would have been a shit show here.
And it should have been said. They should have said it. They should have said it 2 years ago. And it would be a non-issue now.
And the problem is, who's advising him? He listens not to his own instincts. And again, another parallel to Hillary Clinton in the last election. A very capable politician, very smart woman. didn't listen to her instincts. She listened to the people who had run Obama's campaigns, who had seen her as an adversary before, and gave her advice. They tried to run her as they would run a traditional male candidate and found out, oh, you can't do that. She didn't go with her own instincts. I don't think Trudeau's going with his own instincts. I think he's listening to people like Butts and Benchin and whoever the hell else. And he should just be going with, he should be the guy who just shoots from the lip and says, Peter Kent is a piece of shit. Now, I don't think he should say it in a debate, but that spirit, he should be who he is. He's not been who he is. And I think he's just been too loyal to the wrong people and given second chances to the wrong people too many times. And yet at the same time, I still think that he's the best choice of the realistic options for prime minister that we have, which will take us over to talking about the Conservative campaign. And I'm just curious, we just spoke to Michelle. Andrew, your thoughts about the Conservative campaign?
Yeah, it's been, from where I sit, fairly subdued. I don't think they're campaigning all that strongly in British Columbia. I don't think Andrew Scheer's been to the capital region, at least that I've noticed.
Maybe he's afraid there'll be a pride parade.
Yeah, I don't know. Pride parade or an anti-pipeline protest, who knows?
Yeah.
I thought it was really...
Or six teenagers with placards. Yeah.
I thought it was really weird that they didn't release their platform until last week.
Really? You thought it was weird that they chose not to release it until after the debate where it could be debated and the holes in it could be put?
Yeah, I mean, I can see why they did
strategically,
it.
Strategically, that's brilliant.
Except that it's cynical, right? Like, it's we're not going to put this out until the last possible minute when nobody has time to, you could say, poke holes in it. I mean, maybe that's the right word, but, you know, assess it, discuss it, talk about whether these are good ideas or not. You know, compare.
You're surprised that,
to, that
this present Conservative Party did something cynical?
I try to maintain a healthy naivety.
That's an unhealthy naivety, I'm afraid, my friend. I am not against conservatives. I was one once. But this party that calls themselves conservatives now, I don't recognize them. But it's interesting you say that their campaign has been subdued. I haven't
in BC.
In BC, okay, yeah. Where you are. But yeah. Nationally, I think that their campaign has been dirty and ugly and underhanded and not what we expect from a Canadian party that with a tradition, a respectful, valuable tradition of contributing to Confederation like the Conservative Party. But it's also been brilliant because it's worked. Because they know that if he just stands there nonstop throwing lies, lie, and that's all that the man's done. He lies. The party lies. A day ago, I got from the Conservative Party of Canada a video alleging that Justin Trudeau was secretly trying to sneak ISIS fighters back into Canada, which is complete bullshit. And they know it's bullshit, but what they also realize is that when you tell enough lies, first of all, people naturally are going to get suspicious that at least some of those lies must be true, because people think where there's smoke, there's a fire, but sometimes where there's smoke, there's an arsonist. And they also, some of those lies, they don't register on the conscious brain. They slip underneath and they stick to the subconscious. Until, like, Chinese water torture, you break.
It's layered lies.
Yeah, it's layered lies. And eventually you think, look, some of these lies have to be true because there's no way, because most people are decent human beings who would not persistently lie and lie in the fashion of the Conservatives and Andrew Scheer. So,
look,
and people judge other people as themselves. They think that they don't think that they're great people. They think that they're decent people and other people are probably as decent as them. So they think there's no way he could be lying about this. And so they start to give the benefit of the doubt that some of this must be true because there's no way somebody would just lie like this. The fact is there is a way somebody would just lie like that. and he has, but people's good nature and wanting to believe that there's no way somebody would just lie so egregiously has benefited the conservatives tremendously.
Mentioned the ISIS one. Were there other ones you had in mind?
Omar Khadr is connected to that too. Like, I mean, the way they went off about how the liberals had basically paid off a terrorist with Omar Khadr. That was, it's, as I said, layers. They've been starting with that in 2015 and tying it to ISIS now. And in the meantime, making everyone that's, you know, relatively Muslim feel as though they might also be in that sphere of people that the conservatives now do not like. It's a message that it appeals to one group only. And I think that's the only group the conservatives have spoken to since just before 2015. And that was not the conservative party that we saw in 2011 and before that was trying to build a big tent as possible. I mean, the messaging that you saw from Stephen Harper in 2015 to now has gotten worse. It's gotten even more controversial. It's gotten even more into fake news. And it's really affecting the discourse of our political discussions all across the media, because we all give credence to that discussion and bring it into forefront.
Discussions we shouldn't even be having. Even when you bring a lie forward and it's refuted, the lie is out there still somewhere to be pushed around. And you know what? It's not.
You can never take that away.
You can't. No, it's like when you watch those courtroom dramas and objection, Your Honor, sustained. The jury will disregard that. No, they won't. They're human beings. They just heard it. You know, it's like, you know, don't tell me bullshit. Like I like to say, don't piss in my ear and tell me it's raining. But the conservatives also, they're not just trying to energize their base, which hates Trudeau because he represents the beta male, who's now in an alpha male position. He represents a different kind of masculinity who is not afraid to apologize or to show empathy or to cry or to care about the weak and the perilous. It's and the antithesis, just the existence of him, who he is, what he is, they hate him. And so energizing their base by just continuing to just throw shit at him, it energizes their base, but it also dispirits the sort of soft liberal support who just get so disgusted with the entire process. They don't show up to vote because they're not excited about it. The liberal campaign hasn't excited them. The entire process has disgusted them. They just say a plague of both your houses, and they don't show up.
To that point, yeah, you know, I think the conservative campaign has been full of lies, but it's still been relatively lackluster. I mean, I think the liberals have really been lucky on two fronts. The first front is that we have not experienced a full-blown global recession. It hasn't come yet. At least it hasn't made landfall here. The second front is that Andrew Scheer is a bit of a dud. I mean, you're talking about you're talking about how the conservatives are trying to portray Trudeau. But in contrast to Scheer, it's not like Scheer is some, you know, gross alpha male, you know, hulking over his opposition. He's not that at all. My dad watched the debate, and he's not super politically involved, but he watched the debate, and he gives me a call right away, and I'm overseas. And he goes, holy shit, why didn't you tell me how terrible Andrew Scheer is? And I said, well, I was trying to sell you on Jagmeet Singh. And he goes, this guy, first of all, this guy's never had a real job. Like, the conservatives keep blasting Trudeau about how he's a school teacher. Well, at least that was a real job. Like, this guy, he claims he was an insurance salesman and never even, you know, passed the exam or whatever. And then second of all, his debate performance was terrible. He's just name calling. He's just saying things that don't make much sense. He's demonstrating no vision for the country. And my dad, who is probably a center right voter, was completely turned off by him. And I do wonder how many people who, you know, turn into the debate or tune into the news just for the election cycle, the more that they see of Scheer, how much they're actually going to be attracted to him, because I don't think the Conservatives are running an inspiring campaign. I don't think they're running a campaign with
they don't
vision.
Like him. They don't, here's the thing. Yeah. I spoke to somebody who was a Conservative politician and is a hardcore right-wing conservative, and he admits Scheer's awful. He hates Scheer. Scheer is a seat warmer. He's a heating pad. The judgment was with the Trudeau mania that happened last time, Trudeau was going to sail to an easy second victory. So the real serious candidates, they kept their powder dry and didn't run for the leadership last time because they didn't want to blow their load and lose. And it seemed like a sure bet that they would. And so who do they elect? I mean, who were the two main candidates? It was either Maxime Bernier or this schmuck. I mean, these are not serious candidates. But if you remember in Ontario in 1990, Mike Harris was also a seat warmer because they thought that the Conservatives couldn't win. So the real power players, the Dennis Timbrels and the people who were the more serious candidates said, yeah, let him blow his brains out. And then next election, all the serious candidates were going to come back. And then what do you know? Mikey gets himself elected. They're not excited about Andrew Scheer. And the fact is, Andrew Scheer, there is so much to dislike about this man. To be going on about Justin Trudeau's blackface as he does, Justin Trudeau apologized and is ashamed. Scheer compared gay marriages to dog's legs and has not apologized. You got a lot of balls criticizing someone who apologized for something he did, 20 years ago, when you did something, what was it, 10 years ago or less? And you haven't apologized. Like, the media is not really focused a lot on the fact that Scheer is a dishonest individual. I mean, look at those photographs those photographs of him shaking hands with people who he said, all of them said that they hated Trudeau. It looked like he was playing hide and go seek. Like, he was popping out from behind bushes and shaking people's hands and scaring the shit out of them.
To Michelle's point, maybe it is just a PR thing with Scheer. Maybe that he just needs better PR.
Go ahead.
I think it's exactly both. He needs better PR, but it's hard to spin anyone who is just a terrible human being. And I'm a great marketer. I don't think I could sell that, right? At some point, people have to realize that this man and the way he is leading this campaign, or whether it's his advisors or what, if you took the words Justin Trudeau and the word liberal out of his vocabulary, he would no longer speak.
can you imagine?
Nothing to say.
Can you imagine Andrew Scheer on one of those like dating things where you're speaking to each person maybe for like 1 minute? All he'd do is talk about Justin Trudeau.
Yeah, well,
absolutely.
All he ever did, I mean, Justin Trudeau, when they were negotiating, when him and Chrystia Freeland were negotiating during the really tense parts of new NAFTA, when Trump was at his full bully speed, and Trudeau and Freeland weren't bending on issues that are important to the country. If you saw Andrew Scheer's tweets, he was wetting the bed, practically begging them, take whatever deal Trump gives you. And then,
well, to be fair, he reports to Trump. I mean, he is his president after all.
To be fair. And then then after they get a deal, which is, I think, the best deal they could have got when dealing with a madman, he says, I could have done better. And didn't we all know some idiot who, when we accomplished something, pointed and said, I could have done that better? I mean,
isn't that what Donald Trump did and hasn't done better on any of those things?
Yeah, but the other thing is that the other reason I think, though, that the Conservative campaign has been smart is because they realized the record of the Trudeau Liberal government has been really good in so many ways, especially in pocketbook issues. And quite frankly, Canadians, North Americans, they tend to vote with their pocketbook. They tend to vote on economic issues and how they feel about the economy. And on the economy was doing damn well. They knew they couldn't win on the facts. So they completely avoided dealing with and criticizing Trudeau's record because on major issues, they couldn't. And so instead,
We had 50,000 more jobs created this election period than was forecasted. I think it was supposed to be like 7,000 new jobs.
Yeah, thank you for interrupting me and pointing that out. But but the fact is, they knew that they had a loser if they were going to campaign against the record of the Trudeau government. But they knew they had a winner in that Trudeau had been sold as a savior and turned out to be a normal human being, and people were naturally confused because they're like, who is Trudeau? Is he this Sunny Ways guy, this guy who's this perfected being, or is he like the rest of us who has a checkered past and has made mistakes and is not perfect? They were confused. Which guy is he? So there's a natural suspicion and discomfort that arose as a result of that. And the conservatives smartly focused on that level of suspicion and discontent and just people being uncomfortable with believing in Trudeau anymore. And for that reason, they're a contender when they should be way at the back.
But isn't it interesting that the conservatives recognized what the liberals should have recognized? You know what I mean? Like you're saying that the conservatives recognize that they can't really go after the record of the Liberal government. And we've just talked about how there are things that the Liberal government did in their record, which they should be highlighting, tangible accomplishments that they're not highlighting on the campaign trail.
Hey, maybe Trudeau should have had Hamish Marshall running his campaign. Andrew, did you have something you wanted to pop in there?
Yeah, I just wanted to say it's worth noting, like, the conservatives have a base, right? So it doesn't matter if Andrew Scheer is a total non-entity. There's something like 30% of Canadians who are going to vote for whoever the conservatives put up.
Right.
60% in Alberta, less elsewhere, but still like a solid number. And a lot of their campaigns, this one, the last one, they're like these surgical things where they make promises that don't make a whole lot of overall sense. It doesn't add up to a vision, but it's aimed at people in particular ridings, typically the 905 around Toronto, the suburbs in the Lower Mainland in BC, where they're trying to pick up, certain seats with promises just tailored to them. I think it's lackluster, but there's a part of me that feels like it's almost by design.
Okay. Michelle?
Well, I was just thinking, this campaign that the Conservatives are running is actually quite smart, even though it is disgustingly dirty. Because not only are they putting that, like you said, that shred of doubt in every voter's mind of, you know what, maybe there's a little truth to that, even when we know it's bullshit. It's getting them wondering, but it's also putting the Liberals on defense. And while they're so busy trying to defend themselves, and I know that we do that here, we're spending so much time, correcting misinformation and arguing with people that do not have the facts and believe whatever the conservatives, tweet out that pops into their mind, that they're not running a strong campaign highlighting themselves because, just like in boxing, the best offense is putting the other person on defense, right? Like they just can't rally around themselves to put up a huge fight when they're just being pummeled the way they are by the conservatives. And in that way, yes, the conservative campaign is incredibly smart and it's working.
And to use that imagery, I was hoping, going back to my love of the Rocky movies, that you remember in the Rocky movie when Apollo Creed was beating the crap out of Rocky, and Mickey says he's letting him kill him. And Paulie said, no, 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 look, he's getting mad. And I was hoping that Trudeau was holding himself back, letting Scheer make all those body blows and exhaust himself, just so Trudeau would eventually get mad and just come back and beat the crap out of an exhausted Scheer who had fired all of his cannons and all the shit into the air already. And it's like, okay, now I'm coming back. But it didn't happen. It just didn't happen.
We still have 5 days left.
Yeah, you know what he needs? You know what I think Justin Trudeau needs right now is he needs somebody like Mickey from Rocky to get in there and say, you're a bum, Justin. You're a bum. You're always going to be a bum. Like, just the kind of thing that got Rocky motivated. he needs that. Trudeau needs the eye of the tiger. Maybe somebody needs to walk around him with one of those big you can't call them ghetto blasters anymore. Yeah, boom boxes. Just playing Survivor's Eye of the Tiger over and over and over again.
Hey, I know just the sock puppet to do it.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's not going to happen.
But I think you're absolutely 100% right. That is exactly what needs to be happen. And people need to stop being nice and just, you know, you don't have to be dirty. But you can't just keep letting yourself get beat down. Eventually, you got to stand up to the schoolyard bully and say, you know what, enough is enough.
You know why? Because as much as people hate schoolyard bullies, they still stand around and cheer when the schoolyard bully beats the crap out of the little guy.
That's exactly what's happening.
Yeah, they still, and eventually they think it's the little guy's fault because why didn't you fight back a little bit more? I'd like to move on to the NDP campaign, and I'm going to go first in a moment to Mo, who's very motivated for the NDP. As far as I'm concerned, the NDP campaign actually began in earnest with the last debate, the English language debate. When Jagmeet Singh showed himself to be personable with a sense of humor, self-effacing. These are traits that Canadians see in themselves. And he actually impressed me as a person and actually beguiled me for a bit before I looked at his record and recognized that, the NDP as a party structurally was a goddamn mess. They didn't have candidates and all the, they were unprepared for the election, whether that's his fault as a leader or not, he was the leader. And I have still a hard time. No, not a hard time. I cannot forgive his delayed denouncement of the glorification of a terrorist who killed 239 people on the Air India thing. Partially because one of the people that was killed was a little girl who was my wife's friend when they were in elementary school. So, that bullshit, as far as I'm concerned, blackface in high school is nothing compared to refusing to denounce somebody who murdered people. But he's apologized. Maybe his character has changed. He's moved past. I think he's probably a capable, decent guy. But let's face it. The campaign only started, and they only started to surge after the election when people saw everybody else up there as cardboard, and they saw here was Jagmeet Singh, who was, he was Spicoli in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. He was the fun guy, and people were looking for somebody they could relate to on a human level, and that's why they're surging. But before that, people were talking about them being wiped out. Mo Amir.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. They kind of came late to the party. I was wondering where this Jagmeet Singh was in the Burnaby South by-election in February. I was wondering where this Jagmeet Singh was in the summer, even when he released his memoirs, his autobiography. Definitely late to the party. It's nice to see him surge now. I can't comment on that Air India stuff, to be honest. I don't know enough about it, and I don't know enough about his previous statements and his statements now. But I will say that in terms of being a progressive voice, in terms of being sometimes a voice of reason in some of those debate moments, he's really shined. And I think he has a great platform based on things that relate to all Canadians, whether it's pharmacare, whether it's climate change, whether it's affordable housing. Those are things that speak to all Canadians right now. And I hope that some communities, as we've talked about on a previous show, can get over the fact that the guy wears a turban, because there's even NDP faithful who have been in the media saying, we're not ready, or Canada's not ready for.
Yeah, you want to talk about a guy who's not going to get elected because of brown face.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's face it.
That was gold.
It's absolutely true. I don't want to tell. You know what? I'll share this, even though I find it disgusting, because I want other people to be disgusted too and realize what Jagmeet Singh has been facing and what people of color in this country face all the time. I had somebody go to my Facebook page, the one run for my Ed the Sock business, and just out of the blue said, not somebody I've ever spoken to before, I don't even know who this person is, said, I'll never vote for the NDP as long as their leader is a poll start. And some of you may understand what that joke means. I was apoplectically offended because as a Jew, whenever I hear somebody, some identifiable group being slandered like that, I just insert the Jew in place and realize you're just talking about these people the way you were talking about my people. So fuck you. Mm-hmm. I have no patience for this. I told the guy, do not ever contact me again. And he said, oh, look who's gone all politically correct. And I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. You get into an elevator with people, you take a shit, and then when people complain and stink about the stink, you say, oh, look who's being politically correct now. And, you know, it's like, you know, you're shit shaming me. Like, no, dude, racism like that and opposing racism like that is not being politically correct. It's being a decent human being. And there's a lot of people out there. And this person somehow felt that it was okay to put in text that I could screen cap a comment like that. And people of color face this shit all the time. I know that. I'm not a person of color. I'm years ago, National Lampoon magazine, a great humorous satire magazine, published a thing about race. And there was a question, are Jews white people? And it said, technically, yes. And then left open this giant box that was just no words. And the message was pretty clear there. But I've faced racism, but not like people of color do, or certainly not as overtly. And this is what Jagmeet Singh has faced. I sadly think that one of the reasons he got elected is because the NDP were trying to show that they were more progressive than the Liberals. I don't know that he necessarily earned his spot. I think with some seasoning and some more time, some more leadership, he could have earned it more. But I'm concerned that he won because of what he looked like.
I think he was, you know, I think he was sort of the NDP's answer to Justin Trudeau in a lot of ways. I think they were trying to.
Well, he was Justin Trudeau plus.
Kind of coolness.
He was Justin Trudeau plus. He was young. He was good looking. He was well dressed, but he was brown.
Stop it, Justin.
And it wasn't it wasn't even close though. Like he won the leadership in a landslide. And it was an open democratic process where members of the party voted. So I don't think it's fair to say he won just because of the color of his skin. I think he won for the same reasons that people are resonating with him now. That he campaigned well and he speaks well and people like him when they meet him.
You really think he speaks well? I had until that debate where he obviously had some really good coaching. I haven't found his speaking during, you know, prior to that to be particularly inspiring.
He has this weird thing in front of the camera. When he's in person, he's actually very personable, very charming. There's something about the camera being on that makes him nervous, and he gets very self-conscious.
Well, you know what?
But putting that aside, I think one of the things where I was disappointed in Jagmeet Singh is this thing with Bill 21 in Quebec. And I think all the parties have completely failed on this. I don't think any party has had the right PR or the right stance on this yet. And, you know, I wish Jagmeet Singh had a stronger stance, obviously, because he is someone who wears a religious symbol. But on top of that, you know, there's obviously overt racism that Jagmeet Singh faces on the campaign trail.
Absolutely.
But then to have the prime minister say, well, you know, as someone who's been discriminated their whole life, I'm very disappointed in you that you wouldn't stand up for this, and my government might do something about it. Like, even that,
I thought that was insincere because, quite frankly, because Trudeau's father put the notwithstanding clause in the Constitution, the federal government can't do shit.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody, no federal government can do shit when a province invokes the notwithstanding clause. One of the stupidest pieces of legislation ever. It's like, yes, we're all going to agree to one common set of rules, except when we disagree, we can say no and you can fuck off. Like, that's what a stupid piece of legislation that was. Michelle, your thoughts?
You know what? I think that Jagmeet Singh is breathing new life into the NDP. I think in 2023, he is going to be the one. That is the party that is going to be ready to make history. And I think we have to watch him very carefully, because if, from the people I talk to right now, if Canadians went to the polls and got to choose their prime minister, not voting, not for their riding, not for their seats, but actually got to vote by name for who they wanted to lead this country, I think Jagmeet Singh would win. And the only thing stopping him is the NDP platform. People are so sick of politicians and the mudslinging. You know, we've got all of the scandal with Trudeau. Most of it's bullshit, but we don't know that. Most people don't know that. And then you've got Andrew Scheer. And Jagmeet Singh's coming right up the middle between those two. And the time is not right. But eventually, unless the other two parties start to actually learn how to govern themselves in order to win the governorship of this country, he is going to come right up the middle and take it from them both.
He may actually, I believe that Justin Trudeau, if he gets a strong enough minority, I mean, look how long Harper lasted with a minority government, 6 years. If he gets a strong enough minority, he will quit in 18 months to 2 years. I think this is Justin Trudeau's last election. I think that definitely the heir apparent for the progressive vote right now is Jagmeet Singh, unless some photos come out of him 20 years ago in whiteface. Andrew, your
thoughts? The Wayans brothers never got in trouble for that. Stephen, it's fine.
No, they did. They're making a sequel to White Chicks, by the way, because that's okay.
I would just add into what's been said that it feels to me like Singh is playing the role this election that Trudeau played last time. Remember last time there were low expectations for Trudeau, you know, in the debates, everyone thought, well, as long as he, you know, doesn't come out and trip over his own feet, it's going to be a success for him.
Right.
I think that's what's like for Singh this time, that expectations were low. If you heard anything about him, you heard that he wasn't ready. You heard that he spoke badly, that kind of thing. I think I've been in the same room as him three times over the last year. I've had some time talking with him and in person. Yeah, he's coherent. He answers questions thoroughly. He strikes me as capable, and I think people maybe are starting to see that on the polling. Like I don't love polling, but it was interesting to me that over the last 2 months, even the last 6 months, it was flat for all the parties. You know, you look at it, and it's like just nothing was moving. Whether it was, you know, the Lavalin affair, the debates, like things were temporary, and it's only in the last few days that any kind of a surge has been.
You know, Andrew, typically people really start thinking seriously about their vote the closer you get to actually voting. That's why polls in this, you know, the past summer, waste of time. People are grilling. They don't give a shit. But when they start getting closer and realize that I actually have to make a decision in a few days, that's when you either see things either solidify as they were, or you see things shift. And that's why I think we're seeing this back and forth. I don't know that Mr. Singh is going to continue to pull at 20%. I don't know that he's going to pull in that kind of vote and get that many seats. I think he's saved the party from being wiped out.
To be a bloodbath.
Yeah, but then the entire NDP campaign started with the last with the English language debate, and sometimes that's for the best because, like Andrew pointed out quite correctly, the expectations were so damned low that people were surprised to see a human being there, and that's why sometimes having that momentum in that last week is good, because people are tired of everybody else, and you're like, hey, look at the Orange Crush the late Jack Layton led, that people weren't really expecting and didn't see coming, and there it was. So definitely I think that Jagmeet Singh is the heir apparent for the progressive left, and I think the liberals have to be concerned, because Trudeau's going to resign. And people have to, you know, the other thing that pisses me off is that these liberals who are whining now about Trudeau not being perfect, you had 36 seats last election. Trudeau didn't want to run for the leadership at that time. He wanted to run for it, but he wanted to wait a few more years. He ran because they literally begged him, because the party was near being wiped out. People were saying it was going to have to merge with the NDP. So he takes them from 36 seats to a majority, and then he isn't perfect, and he doesn't fulfill all his promises, and they hold their nose and walk away. It's like, you got a lot of freaking nerve. You know, it's Janet Jackson's song, "What Have You Done For Me Lately?"
tough business.
And you know what? There were people who were, I was in politics years ago in political broadcasting. I was a political candidate, believe it or not, for the Conservatives under Mike Harris's first run. And I walked away from politics after he got elected, because I went to my riding association where I was the president and said, I'm not happy with the way that they're, you know, we're taking shots at single mothers and welfare cheats, when we know for a fact that actual welfare cheats are statistically, they're under 1%. It's not relevant. And single mothers are trying to just make ends meet. We're picking on the vulnerable. And everyone turned on me and called me a communist. And I walked away from politics then. Since then, there have been some people who approached me and said, have you thought about going into politics? And the answer is no freaking way. Because who would subject themselves to this kind of environment? And anybody who thinks that once this genie, this ugly genie, is out of the bottle, it's ever going to go back to the kind of civility we knew, you're dreaming. It may get more civil than this election. And I hope that it will. I hope that Scheer and his buddy Hamish Marshall and the others are gone. And maybe we get some conservatives that have a conscience in there. And maybe the next election, we see people talking about issues, because there have been no real issues talked about. This campaign has been all about, who do you like best? It's like we're electing school president for grades, or, you know, class president in grade six.
It's not who you like best. It's who you hate least.
Yes. Well, though in the case now of Mr. Singh, it's who you like best. But the issues, the real issues, we've been shortchanged. And I blame the media largely for that. Because, Scheer was giving them red meat, and they were acting like they haven't eaten for months. They just took whatever he gave them. And listen, we're in a clickbait world. They're all trying to survive and save their jobs. I don't forgive them. I think journalism is a sacred trust, and you shouldn't just be chasing eyeballs. But I understand it. So we've had no discussion, substantive discussion, about issues that are important to Canadians. None whatsoever. And that debate, that one debate, that was not a substantive discussion of issues. It was a shit show.
I think that speaks to the communications, or I should say the cynicism of the communications of all the major parties. And again, that goes back to the very first point that we had, is that the Liberals were not talking about their track record, they were not talking about their accomplishments, they were not talking about issues. And I think that speaks to every party. And I think it's permeated throughout our political culture, where we do not talk about issues. We are not debating policy over the dinner table. And I think the source of that is the political communications from all the major parties.
Okay, I'm going to give everybody a last comment to make, to sum up their thoughts about this election, the campaigns. If you want to focus on a specific campaign, strengths or weaknesses, you want to talk about the whole thing. I'm going to give each of you 30 seconds to a minute to sum up your thoughts, and I'm going to start with Andrew.
I think I'll maybe pick up just from where we're leaving off there, and on the media, I agree that a lot of it has been superficial. I think you can find stuff out there on policy and that sort of thing. There's been a fair bit of talk about pharmacare, for instance, in particular. There's been some talk about taxation and different plans for taxation. But a lot of it gets overshadowed by stuff like the brown face story, like who's going to reopen the abortion debate and that
juvenile shit, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the media largely plays into it more than we should. We pick up these stories that, as you say, are clickbait or everything that happens, we assess it in terms of, well, what does this mean for the horse race? You know, oh, Justin Trudeau, pictures came out of him in brown face. What does this mean for his chances in the election?
Right.
And not enough just sort of, discussing things at a policy level at sort of what they mean. And the debate, as has been mentioned before, was just horrible for along those lines as well, that it could have been a lot better for sort of introducing people to the
candidate. Going to stop you there, and I'm going to move to Hafiz. Hafiz, 30 seconds to a minute. Try to keep it in there. Your final thoughts.
Well, I didn't get to speak on Jagmeet Singh, so I'm going to say that in terms of his campaign, he can say whatever he wants and promise the world, and at the end of the day, he's never going to have to deliver on it, because at the end of the day, the best he can get is third place. The other thing is, his platform is mostly idealism. It doesn't focus on anything pragmatic on how to actually achieve these goals. And for it to be a sell to a population and an electorate all across Canada, it needs to be something a little bit more realistic. I think in the end, he did, however, steal Justin Trudeau's thunder and opportunity to actually make a major sell. But you know what? I think we're all going to be in the same discussion this time next year.
We may very well. And if it's a minority situation, they're either stable for 6 years like Harper, or they're really unstable and we're back again in 6 months, 18 months, 2 years. Who knows? Let's go to Michelle. Michelle, final thoughts.
I think you guys nailed it with the word clickbait, that this entire election and politics as we know it has now been changed fundamentally through social media and the internet. And the only way we're ever going to get it back is to really focus on our grassroots politicians and representatives to reach people at a personal level and get the conversation away from the clickbait. That being said, we are where we are and we have to move forward. And even with everything else going on, I would take Justin Trudeau over Andrew Scheer any frickin' day of the week. And I damn well hope we do it on Monday.
Okay, that was succinct. Thank you. Mo Amir.
I love politics. I love speculating on politics. One thing we didn't mention is we don't vote for a prime minister. We vote for a local representative send to Ottawa. And one thing I'm telling all my friends who come to me and say, who should I vote for? I say, look at who your slate of local representatives are. Try to meet them if you can and make your choice based on that, because that's the person that's going to represent you in Ottawa. And saying that, you know, whether it was Sven Robinson, Tamara Taggart, or Jody Wilson-Raybould, if any of those three people were in my riding, I'd vote for them.
Okay, I would vote for Jody Wilson-Raybould to stop existing, personally. But not in a violent way. Not in a violent way, but just sort of like a portal opens and she's gone.
That's a whole new podcast.
Yeah, that's a whole new podcast.
See how I set up a sequel?
Yeah, you did a fine job there.
And with Sven Hyder rings.
I would say that my opinion is that Justin Trudeau, not Justin Trudeau, the Liberal Party for me is the only practical party that's progressive or center progressive that can win this next election. The NDP aren't going to surge into first place. So I would say if you were thinking of voting Liberal, if you're at all progressive, vote Liberal. If in you're living in a riding where it's a safe NDP or Green Party riding, and or it happens that the NDP or Green Party candidate is well ahead of the Conservative, well ahead of the Liberal, or is well ahead of the Liberal but is close with the Conservative, vote for the NDP or the Green Party. Deny the Conservatives seats, whichever way you can do it, because we've come too far to go backwards. I do not want what's his name? Scheer has said that he's in lockstep with Jason Kenney and Doug Ford, two people who are doing things to their province that they're, what they're doing, usually, if they were polite, they would use lube. But they're not. They're doing horrible things to people who can't fight back and who are vulnerable. And I don't, it's not the kind of Canada I want to see. I think rich people, the wealthy people and wealthy corporations, they're wealthy enough. I think the middle class needs a break. I think that poor people, not only do they need a hand up, they certainly don't need a kick in the face like Doug Ford did when he canceled the guaranteed income supplement program, even though there were poor people who were depending upon that to do things like eat. I don't want to see that in this country. And it turns out that the Liberals are the only party that can reasonably form a government that leans towards progressive and that I believe actually gives a shit about you, me, the people on this podcast, people listening, of the two main parties that are in contention. I do believe the NDP care. I do believe the Green Party care. I think that the Conservative Party, listen, their slogan said it all. It's time for you to get ahead. Their emphasis was all on you, not about we. It was all you. And the implication was that somebody else had been getting ahead in your place. They knew what dog whistles they were blowing when they set their campaign. And I think the way that they've acquitted themselves in this campaign shows they're not suited to run a country like Canada. So go out there, do your voting. I'm not going to tell you how to vote. Wait, I just did. But you don't have to listen to me. And you're not going to. You're going to decide when you get there and you stand inside that cardboard sleeve from Staples that they put on the desks and you're given that little card to put your X on, you're going to stand there and you're going to have your moment of truth. And you're going to really have to think in that moment and take your time, because you do not have to vote rush when you're voting. Take your time. You're going to have to really think about what's important to you when you cast that ballot. You're going to have to look at all of these distractions in this campaign. And I'm sorry that earlier I mentioned that the word juvenile immediately following the discussion, you know, mentioning of abortion rights. I don't think concern about abortion rights is juvenile. But you're going to have to think about what's important to you. What vision of the country do you have? And who do you think can deliver that best? You're going to have to make that decision. And to the people out there who say, I'm going to send the government a message by not voting, the only message you're sending is ignore me. Because if you think that the government, that the various parties cry when voter turnout is low, you're wrong. Because all it means is they have less people they have to convince to vote for them. It makes their jobs easier. If you want to make things hard for politicians, you get out and you vote. You don't sit there at home and think that they're going to be upset that you didn't go and turn up at the polls, because that's just counterintuitive and it's stupid. I want to thank my guests, Andrew McLeod of thetyee.ca. It's thetyee.ca. You're the legislative, I'm sorry, I always forget, legislative
bureau chief for thetyee.ca. And, okay. And thanks for having me back.
Thank you for being here. Hafiz Nirani, a digital consultant and advisor, and one day I'll find out what that means. Thank you very much for joining us, as always, and for we look forward to you on Mensplaining, which you can find here on FU Politics. If you think by the name that it's a bunch of guys standing around or talking about how aggrieved they are, you will be pleasantly surprised, because it is quite the opposite. I want to thank Mo Amir. His podcast is This Is Van Color. I encourage you, please, to listen, to subscribe. It is certainly worth your time. And I want to thank our newbie, Michelle Badusky. Michelle, I have to tell you that when we have new panelists, I'm always concerned about how, if they're going to pull their weight, how they're going to come across. And you have done such an excellent job that
thank you.
I can't believe this is your first panel with us. And I hope that there are many more, because
anytime
you did add some really good cogent points, and I appreciate your thought pattern, and you represent a part of the country that we are a little low on as far as representation on our panels, and it's important to get perspectives from everywhere. And I'm glad we had a woman on this panel, not
Me
because
too.
I'm politically correct, but because women experience the world differently than men, and just as people of color experience the world differently than people who are white. And getting a bunch of people together who experience the world the same way, what's the point? Oh, that's the rebel. And we're not that. Which brings me to the point that they have a couple million bucks in their coffer from donations. And we're looking to build up. We've got an agency that's looking to get sponsors for us. That's brand new. But we do have a Patreon, which means that you can subscribe. $1 a month is where it starts. $5 a month, one of those expensive coffees you can do without. We've got people who've given 20 bucks a month, 50 bucks a month. I don't care how much you give. Start at a dollar. For some people, a dollar is as precious as $50 is to somebody else. I understand that. So if you want to donate, you go to patreon.com/FUNetworkTV. If you want to just donate, as some people have done, in a lump sum, give a little donation to help us out, you can do that at PayPal. Our address there is FUNetworkTV@gmail.com. And if you don't have any money at all, but you want to help out, there are things that we need. There are jobs that we need filled. There are roles we need filled that maybe you could do. Maybe you could help us out with. That could be your contribution. And it may very well be more important to us than what you could give financially. So if you're interested in helping us out, we need researchers. We need people to help produce these shows. We need people to help come up with topics. We need lots of things, because we're building from the ground up. We did not expect that our first week we would be in the top 20 of iTunes Canada under the politics section. We certainly didn't expect 10 days later to be in the top 5, beating CBC, BBC, and others. We're now in a new category that they've created. They create new categories every week, where we're ahead of CBC, Global, just about everybody. We didn't expect the growth to be that fast. We're glad that it was. We're glad that you people, Ross Perot said that in the campaign, and it caused him problems. We're glad that we're speaking to you in a way that you want to be spoken to, in a way that you can understand, in a way that my alma mater, Much Music, spoke to people. And no jargon, no big words, no elitism, just people being honest. And I'm glad you've embraced it. I'm glad that you're enjoying it. Help us keep it real. Help us keep it building. And you have no idea the plans we have going forward, but you'll be very, very happy for them. So I want to thank everybody. I'm Stephen Kersner. This has been the No Bullpen. Please vote. Whatever you do, please vote. Even if you just show up to spoil your ballot, take the effort, because there's people around the world who are dying, literally, to have the right to vote. You've got it. Don't take it for granted. Thanks for listening. And this is FU Politics on Fun, the FU Network.
This is Fun, the FU Network.